Good morning. My name is Stephanie, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the CCA Industries 2017 Fiscal Year-End Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. If you are listening through the webcast and would like to ask a question, please dial into the conference call using the numbers listed on the webcast console. Thank you. Steve Height, Chief Financial Officer, please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our year-end 2017 investor call. I'll start by reading our Safe Harbor statement. Statements that may be made today that are not historical facts are forward-looking statements, as that term is defined in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, which would cause actual results to differ materially from estimated results. Such risks and uncertainties are detailed in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. No assurance can be given that the results of any forward-looking statement will be achieved, and actual results could be affected by one or more factors which would could cause them to differ materially. For these statements, we claim the protection of the safe harbor for forward-looking statements contained in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act. And now that I've gotten the legal part over with, I will review with you our financials, and then I'll turn it over to Lance Funston, our CEO. So for the fiscal year 2017, we posted total revenues of $19,830,098, and we had income from operations after tax of $1,831,181. That is a increase of about 55% over 2016, which had net income of $1,181,210. The a lot of the changes that have occurred, as you can see, cost of sales was slightly less due to the company's cost-saving efforts in regards to our outsourced contract manufacturing. Also, our SG&A expenses were less due to the company's management's efforts in controlling costs. Of note that I do want to point out on our financial statements is looking at the balance sheet. Couple things. Number one, you will see as of November 30th, 2017, that we reported under current assets deferred income taxes of $2,079,988. That is going to be changing as a result of changes with GAAP that the company has to adhere to. And all deferred tax assets will be reclassified as non-current, which means that entire $2 million number I just read to you will be put together with a non-current amount and shown as a non-current asset. The company has made significant improvements to its working capital, and we had gone from, in essence, negative working capital to positive working capital as of year end, but this change will affect our balance sheet in that it'll decrease our current assets and increase our non-current assets. So that's one big change I wanted to point out. Another change I wanted to point out is on the balance sheet, on accounts payable and accrued liabilities, you can see that there was a large decrease from 16 year-end to 17 year-end, going from $5.6 million to $3.6 million. and that was due to the payment of what we called all the legacy expenses. Those were all the expenses we had from the restructuring, all of which have been paid off now, severance costs, and we also had other costs that we had incurred. Actually, the change is greater than that when you go back and look at 2015. The change from 2015 is over $5 million. That means that the company, which has been generating positive cash flow for the last 2 years, but all of its cash flow has gone towards reducing that debt. The other point I'd like to make in looking at our financials is looking forward into the first quarter of 2018. As everyone is aware, the Congress had enacted a tax cut for that took effect in December. And so our federal tax rate has now been reduced to 21%. However, when that the flip side of that is, while our taxes are lower, that means that the value of our deferred tax assets are lower. That creates a huge income tax expense that we will be recording in the first quarter, that could likely show a first quarter loss pertaining specifically to the change in the tax rate. The company has a significant carry-forward tax loss that's part of that deferred tax asset, and which means that as we're burning up the deferred tax and the net operating loss on a current cash basis, the company just has to pay very minimal federal income tax. But with it, we are going to have to record for fiscal statement purposes that decrease in the deferred tax assets. It's really, for all intents and purposes, a non-cash transaction. Our cash flow has been strong, and as you could see, we generated, even with a decrease in accounts payable, we generated cash used in our operating activities of over $1.1 million, which most of that was used to reduce the borrowing that the company had. The last point I wanted to make is that as a subsequent event that took place after the close of the year, it took place in the first quarter, the company on February 5th signed a new credit agreement, moving our credit facility to PNC Bank. That credit agreement provided us a term loan for $1.5 million and a revolving credit loan up to a maximum of $4.5 million. As of today, we do not have anything borrowed on the revolving line of credit. We only have the outstanding term loan. And at the same time, which Lance Funston will discuss later, he exercised warrants that were held by an entity that he controls, and that exercise of warrants had put a significant amount of cash into the company as well. With that, I will turn it over to Lance Funston.
I'm assuming you're all sitting on the edge of your chair after that exciting exposition by Steve. I actually, he just nudged me and woke me up, so I guess it's time for me to say something. I'm a little bit reluctant to say anything because I'm supposed to have a positive impact on the investor support for the company, these calls, I guess, were tended to do that. But after the last call, I think the stock went to a 12-month low. So apparently, I shouldn't say a whole lot because it didn't have very much positive impact on the stock price. But I'm assuming you guys are all over 21, so I'm just going to say I'll give you a little bit of insight in terms of why I'm here. I just like the sector. This personal care sector had attracted me and my advisors because it seemed to me that it's the difficulty in getting products on the shelf in the big boxes, the Targets and Walmarts of the world, had become so daunting that the space is commanding, I think, very high multiples, not necessarily on earnings, but on net sales, because most of the companies that have high net sales have already taken on the challenge of getting that shelf space for their products. I started buying personal care products about 15 years ago, purchasing initially Prell and Denorex, sold those properties a couple of years ago for about 3x net revenue. And the current market is a 3x plus net revenue. Now, Steve says I can't do the math for you, but if you're all over 21, you can take the 20 million net revenue and you can multiply it times 3 plus yourself and figure out whether or not my decision to exercise an additional, $1 million for some change in warrants, as well as my initial investment of $4 million plus in this sector is intelligent or not. You decide, it's your money, and I'm not going to tell you how to invest it. The transition, I think, is complete. I took over the CEO responsibility, a couple of years ago. And I think at this point, Steve and Doug Haas have done a brilliant job of controlling costs and convincing, I guess, to a certain extent, they've convinced the banks to provide really more traditional credit facilities. Now we have a term debt and a revolver from PNC. The working capital division now allows me to start investing in new initiatives as well as gives us some dry powder for acquisitions. Acquisitions make a lot of sense, but not, it's much more likely at the 3x net revenue that I'm going to decline to buy a lot, even though we look at acquisitions as often as they come on the market. Every time we bid, it seems as though somebody else is a little more aggressive. But I don't think that's going to help you or me realize higher share value if we go chasing something at an unrealistic price. In terms of a 30,000-foot view, without getting into details, I have noticed that two of our products have been very responsive to a little bit of digital marketing tests we did. And it's not been significant, but last year we did spend about 10% of our media budget went into digital, and we discovered that two products, Bikini Zone and Plus White, both had substantial response in terms of the millennial market that we have not been tapping into with TV. My daughter is 17 and 19, don't even have a TV. Apparently, for the millennial, it's a matter of advertising on Facebook, YouTube, using influencers, using Instagram and AdWorks, and we've been testing all those vehicles. And now, this year, we're going to take the nominal 10% of our budget, increase it to 50%. So in 18, we will be 50% in traditional TV media, which is the area I grew up in, but we'll also have 50% of our budget dedicated to digital, and hopefully that'll allow us to tap into this new phenom. And I think I'd rather at this point know what you want to ask questions about, if you have any, rather than continue to chat, because I really don't want to drive the stock down any further. Any questions? or Steve or me, and Doug Haas, our president's here too, on the operations side.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And we'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Lenny Dunn with Mutual Trust. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, and looks like we finally made it. I appreciate all the hard work you've done, and it's taken longer than I initially expected, but I felt that when you came on, Lance, that that was a sign the company was going to finally get turned around. And the previous management wasn't able to do it, but it's done now. We got all our legacy costs behind us. We got the balance sheet cleaned up, and you've put on a new distribution company. I forgot the name of it, but you replaced Emerson, and they'll get you in more places. So it looks like the future looks bright, but, you know, clearly we have to do acquisitions, and that's what you're trying to do, and the Porcelana acquisition has worked well, and if we can find things like that, you know, clearly we have great earnings power. The only request I'd have is if you could put out EBITDA when you put out your releases, because I think this company's easier to read based on EBITDA because of the cash flows. And if you could put those in the releases, that would be helpful. And perhaps if you can give us some forward-looking EBITDA, as many companies do, that would also be helpful.
Lenny, I'm finding that we do, now did we not produce an EBITDA in our last?
I did not in the press release.
But you did in the 10-K?
No, you can't do it in the 10-K, but we did put we did not do it in the press release in EBITDA, but it's easy enough to calculate out
all the prior companies, Lenny, that I've acquired have been private. This is my first entry into public company, but I've noticed that in the private world, EBITDA rules. In this personal care space, EBITDA seems to be irrelevant. And I say that only because the values are all derived by purchase sale activity in which the acquirer usually has all the infrastructure in place. He looks at that net revenue line and says, well, I'll just bring that into my revenue base, and usually not with much change in terms of the SG&A side. That is, they've already got that infrastructure in place. But I think to the extent that that's an interest in the investment community, I think it's a good suggestion, and you made it in a previous call. I did give it to Steve, and I think he did. He's including it in the internal documents, but certainly...
Right. It was on the prior press release, just not on this one.
And
the EBITDA is simple enough to calculate. Anyone, if you look at the income statement, it clearly shows that our income before tax was $3,004,000. We had interest expense of $505,000, and we had depreciation and amortization of $84,000. So when you add all that up, it gets you to somewhere in the area of about $3,590,000 of EBITDA for last year.
I understand, and I was able to figure that out, but a lot of people don't take the trouble to do that. And I did appreciate it in your last release, and if you could do it going forward, it would be much appreciated.
Be happy to do it, Lane. That's a great suggestion. And any other questions?
Again, if you, If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. There are no further questions at this time.
Thanks for listening, guys. We're going to wrap it.
Yes. So thank you very much for participating in the call, and we look forward to talking to you with our first quarter 2018 earnings call.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.